morning and happy Saturday, everyone. Welcome to the Senior Care Conversation, the show that is dedicated to helping families navigate the challenges of senior care. I am your host, Hillary Bailey. I am extremely excited about today's show. We are going to be joined by Nicole Pelosi, a process engineer, an OPEX executive, and a Six Sigma Black Belt who turned personal caregiving challenges into a mission. Nicole experienced firsthand the difficulties of finding quality, affordable in-home care while raising her children and caring for her in-laws. This inspired her to create OndiCare, a tech-enabled platform connecting families with vetted caregivers, ensuring fair wages while providing flexible and reliable support. Nicole, we are so happy to have you with us here today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So we are just going to jump right in here. So let's talk about high caregiver turnover. So how does high caregiver turnover affect the continuity of care and the emotional well-being of seniors and their families?
Yeah, and I'm sure, Hillary, you have a lot to contribute to this as well. But constant turnover disrupts trust and routine, and it leaves seniors anxious and families feeling completely unsettled, and they start to fail at home and at work. But it also places the blame on the caregiving workforce itself when we have arcane, broken systems that do not value those that actually provide care.
I completely understand that. When I opened my agency, I told you before, I own a home care agency here in Texas. One of the things that I did before I opened was go around and speak to caregivers and ask them what they liked, what they didn't like, what would make their job better. Obviously, number one is pay, right? So I pay my caregivers extremely well. Unfortunately, that makes me a little, more expensive, but you know what? My turnover, I don't have it.
Exactly. And the industry turnover in the industry is almost 80%. It's probably more now, but it was 79%. So your agency is the unique model. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how I built OndiCare. I had an MVP in market and I was talking to hundreds of caregivers. What will make it worth your while to be on time, to give it your all? And it was two things, like you said, pay and flexibility and support to succeed, which is missing for most.
Absolutely. Support is huge. That was one of the things that the caregivers told me was, Hillary, we don't feel supported by our agency. We just feel like we're out here doing a job, they're paying us low and we're making them money. And I'm like, well, I can definitely understand that, but that's why I try to take care of my caregivers as well as I can, as far as like definitely with the flexibility, definitely with better pay, and giving them, letting them see clients that they're comfortable with. Not everybody's comfortable with every kind of client. So if they're uncomfortable, they're not going to be confident. So I want to make sure that they feel comfortable with the clients that they do have. So
it's a two-way street. It is completely a two-way street.
You are so right. So what, in your opinion, what challenges do weekly minimums create for families who only need limited support?
Well, I think for agencies, it reduces the customer lifetime value. But what it's doing to families is they're getting denied care when they want to start needing care, whether it's a couple hours a week. Weekly minimums force families to pay for care that they don't need, making support unaffordable and inaccessible for most. Mm-hmm. And even families who sell off assets are running out of money today. And then they're jumping in themselves providing care, mm-hmm. whether they're trained or not, because they've made promises to their loved ones. You will age out in your home. And it's just providing extraordinary stress and failure modes. Six Sigma is all about eliminating failure modes. And when you stress an infrastructure, that's what happens. You have multiple failure modes.
So talk with me about, I'm going to go a little off script here, I hope you don't mind, Talk to me about how OndeCare can handle those families who, because, you know, we get calls all the time. I just need somebody to come over and bathe my dad. Sometimes I can make that happen. You know, if I have a caregiver that lives super close, sometimes I cannot. And caregivers don't want to drive in Houston traffic for 30 minutes to go work for 1 hour and then drive back home. So it's, I love, I'm assuming that you guys can offer this. Can you tell me a little bit about that? So for agencies like me, we can say, hey, we don't do that, but let me send you over here so you can get your needs met.
Yes, and that's how we grow, how clients find us, as referral partners from agencies that understand and know that OndeCare is available. Our system is a tech-enabled solution. We do have a minimum, but it's a two-hour minimum, and that's it. And that is to support the caregiver's needs so that when – there's two things. There's the minimum – but there's also a bidding system. So if the job is 2 hours and a caregiver is like, well, I'm available for that 2 hour minimum, but I have to drive an hour round trip to get there. So they'll bid a rate that makes it worth their while. We educate them on how to attract and retain customers. They are so equipped with how to give somebody a bath with a sense of decorum, or to run errands, or to help manage meds, or any of the typical ADLs that are necessary, but they don't know, they've never been trained on how to attract and retain customers and how to communicate. So our app helps them with that. Mm-hmm. Our care concierge team supports them and helps them create messaging that is on point for the customer. But they also teach them how to bid a job that makes it so when it comes up, whether it's 2 hours, 4 hours, 8 or 12, that it's worth their while and they won't decide not to show up. So they might bid a little higher rate, and it's different. They'll bid a little higher rate for the 2 hour job that's 30 plus miles away, or they'll bid a lower rate for the 2 hour job for the little lady that's on the corner of their neighborhood on the way back from Cleveland Clinic, let's say, from their main job. Mm-hmm. So they have that flexibility to choose and bid on the job. And then if you apply numbers and a tech-enabled solution that drives a matching system that's intelligent, you have hundreds of caregivers. You reaches out to all of them and those bid. And it's a numbering system. You know, it's a numbers game. You have to reach out to enough for them to be able to get a short list of real-time matches of those interested and available. And that's how OndeCare supports that situation.
I think that's amazing. You know, while you were talking, I was thinking, man, you know, sometimes, you know, I have caregivers that are full-time, some that are part-time. They, like, again, they have the flexibility to work when they want, but maybe they only have 20 hours and I don't have a client to fill that in. Like, bidding on with OndeCare would be wonderful because then they can, you know, pick up more hours. That's just great. I'm so glad you're on this show today. You're helping everybody and you're helping me. This is wonderful.
Well, we have to do this together. There's not one organization big enough. We're not at Amazon yet. None of us are. It's just so fragmented. We have to work together. We are together a part of this solution. There's no one solution out there that's going to solve the problem, at least not today.
Collaboration, not competition. I'm very big on that. So in your opinion, and I don't know the answer to this question, for our caregivers out there that are working for agencies that are getting paid $11 and $12 an hour, because that still is happening, why is the cost still so high?
Overhead and traditional business model acumen, mm-hmm. right? So agencies were built just like what's happened in the travel and hotel industry today needs to happen. We need to democratize home care because they don't need to change their business model. So they don't. They're still turning away business. What causes somebody to change a business model is they're losing customers. But the demand is so high that's not what's going to happen first. So they have an arcane business model. There's tons of overhead associated with coordination and And just padding, quite frankly, I'm sure it's not in your agency because it's a new agency, but just that traditional mindset has a lot of padding that takes more than half of what the client pays. Now, I will say COVID has helped this a little bit. The industry average before COVID was $11.88 an hour. And it made me sad when you said it's still happening today,
yeah,
which
it
is, it's so sad.
Mm-hmm.
But the average is now $14 an hour. So people are like, wow, that's great. It is still, but can you live on $14 an hour?
Mm-mm.
Really? And you know, you can make more at McDonald's today or Target or Amazon Warehouse. Why would you? This job is the most taxing, both physically and emotionally, people don't get. And it is an infrastructure of our entire ecosystem care, whether we're doing it ourselves for our family members as unpaid care workers or as a paid caregiver. And that's, this just has to change.
I agree. My pay at my agency is between 18 and 22. That's
good
how
for
I pay
you.
My caregivers.
Good for
they're,
you.
They're worth it. They're worth every penny. They're out there doing the hard work every day. They're worth every single penny.
Yep.
Every single
and that's
penny.
On par with what the caregivers make on OndeCare. It's an average of 22. Mm-hmm. But a client pays, you know, the caregiver earns 80% of what the client, whatever agreement they make. The caregiver says, I need to make $20 an hour. The client automatically will pay $25 an hour. If we give them a discount because it's a volume or they're part of one of our employer groups, it comes out of our $5. The caregiver's pay never changes.
That's
again,
great.
You have to make sure there's not a reason for them to say, wait a minute, why am I doing this? Why am I driving across town?
Yep.
Our minimum, the caregiver can earn 16, but that's because they'll do that for somebody in their neighborhood. But on average, they're making more than $22 an hour, between 22 and 23.
That's great. So guys, we're going to be right back after the break when we dive deeper into how America truly values caregiving and the challenges that come with it. We'll be right back. We'll be right back with more insight, expert advice, and stories that matter to every generation. And we're back. I'm Hillary Bailey, and you're watching the Senior Care Conversation on Now Media Television. Want more of what you're watching? Stay connected to the show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move? You can also catch the podcast version right from our website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. All right, guys, we are back, and Nicole Pelosi is still here with us. And in this segment, we are going to focus on how caregiving, both paid and unpaid, is undervalued in America. We're going to explore the emotional, financial, and societal impacts this creates for families and professionals alike. Welcome back, Nicole.
Thank you.
Okay, so we are going to dive right in. So our first question is, what does the heavy reliance on unpaid family caregivers reveal about how our society views aging and caregiving?
It shows that we see caregiving as a private burden rather than a shared societal responsibility. More importantly, it's going to break our U.S. economy because in 10 years, it'll greatly impact the workforce. More families will choose to have a single earner in the household as demand grows because they won't be able to handle the burden. I'm not sure if you realize this, but our entire workforce in 10 years will be millennials, and they all have boomer parents. These generations are about the same size. They're huge. So right now we have a small sandwich generation, but our entire workforce will be in this sandwich generation. And millennials are waiting until much later to have children. So they'll have toddlers. I have a teenager. I had a child late in life. I have a teenager and my parents are in their 80s. But in 10 years, our workforce will have toddlers and parents in their 80s. That's going to change the capacity to work.
Oh, absolutely. And I like how you talked about, how people make it private and they don't feel like it's a shared, responsibility. There is so, I can't think of the word I'm trying to use right now, but I'll come back to it. I can't remember what I was going to say. It happens. So let's
No,
get the,
I think I understand where you're coming from.
yeah.
It's a private, it's something that people are afraid to share.
Yes.
Just like, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, and it, I think they feel very alone.
It's isolating.
It's very,
It's
there you
so
go. Thank you.
that's our word.
Yeah, that's
We were
the word.
both
Yeah.
struggling for it.
Yes, it's very isolating, and I think in my experience, people don't feel like they can say, "Man, this is really hard." Like they think, okay, these are my parents. I should be happy to be able, happy to take care of them. I should never complain. And it's like, no, you are doing the hardest job. It's okay to have some feelings. It's okay to talk about that. Go to a support group, whatever you need to do. But please don't isolate yourself. Please, please open your mouth. Please talk about it. So we're gonna get back on wages. I know we talked a little bit about this before. So how do wages for professional caregivers compare to the complexity and importance of their work?
Yeah, I think we did hit on this, and maybe I jumped in too quickly, but caregivers perform critical, life-dependent, complex work that is both physically and emotionally taxing, but are often paid less than, like I said, what they are that could earn at McDonald's. And it's far below their true value. Caregiving, if we thought about it was blessing from Caring Africa, actually, that said this. It's an infrastructure, kind of like our road system. It's like telling people to build the road to get to your office. Managing caregiving is it's our infrastructure for this country, and all countries, quite frankly. And this it needs to be looked at as such, rather than this private thing that has nothing to do with the society.
So we both know there's a lot of emotional and financial tolls that go along with for families. I see this every day because normally by the time people reach out to you or they reach out to me, they are exhausted and they don't know where else to turn. They just know that they need help. So let's talk about that. So what emotional and financial tolls do families face when they're forced to take on the caregiving without the adequate support that they need?
Well, they're experiencing burnout. They're experiencing failure. I felt this with my in-laws. I was failing at home. I was failing at work, and I was failing my children and them. Nothing was successful. Lost income. Not going to work. Work without pay. Scrabbling to get to recover from a deadline, strained relationships. It significantly impacts relationships with your spouse and your children, and declining health ultimately. We stop taking care of ourselves, and that's all of those things together is just degrading the human being.
And what I find too often is, some people, obviously, there's different financial situations. Some of, my clients' children pay for their care. And that is, wow, to me, that is just like, I mean, if, I'm sure they really, really appreciate it, but not only does that puts a financial, burden on their children as well.
Oh, definitely. And they're paying for their care, like from home care, like for us, but they're also paying, we subsidize care for my father-in-law, who had Parkinson's, when we couldn't take care of him in our home any longer. There was nothing to pay the bill at the facility. So we had to commit to a monthly payment. It's it, and that does exactly that. It it's not only a strain on what we're doing on a day-to-day basis, it's a strain on our bank accounts and our future, our own retirements.
Absolutely. So in what ways does undervaluing caregivers contribute to high turnover in a shrinking workforce?
Low pay, lack of flexibility to support their own family care needs. They push caregivers to leave for jobs with better stability.
Absolutely.
More self-respect, feeling valued. And there's lots of jobs out there. So we're losing this workforce. And this workforce requires a special human being, somebody who has the compassion, who has the respect, who has the ability to give somebody else a bath, to help clean them up after a bowel movement. This isn't this isn't faint of heart work. Right. And the people that can do it are special. They have a special piece that we can't take advantage of any longer.
Right. I always try to tell my caregivers, I feel like, for me, of course, when I opened my company, you know, a little, in, you know, almost 2 years ago, I was the caregiver. You know, it was me. It was me. And so you have to, like, I think my favorite part was just cultivating relationships with these people, getting close to them, hearing about their stories. And so I feel like that's the emotional attachment that you get to these people. Like, you do have to have the heart for that. You have to walk in and see them as like a whole human being, not like, okay, you're this geriatric person that's now bedbound that I need to take care of. No, no, no. They had a whole life before you met them. A whole life.
And you're not only there for the emotional and physical well-being of the patient, as they call it, the person you're caring for, but also the family members. They're so stretched and they're isolated, like we were discussing. And sometimes, even today, I have family caregivers, both male and female. People think that only females are out there. It's usually the adult female that's the first caregiver, but the adult males are picking up the pieces as well. And the only people they feel comfortable talking to are those in OndiCare, our care concierge team. So, because they don't want to burden their mom, who they're caring for, or their neighbors, or their friends, and or their spouse is a little bit tired of everything that's changed their family dynamic. You're there for, there is a lot that a caregiver manages. And if you look at our reviews, our caregivers, we call them heroes, are so well loved. They become part of the fabric of people's families. And they're so thankful for them.
I love that. So Nicole, for viewers who want to learn more about OndiCare or the support, the caregiver community, where can they go to find and talk with you and sign up?
Well, OndiCare is free to join. It's OndiCare.com. It's short for On Demand Care. So OndeCare.com. You just click the sign up button, that pink button at the top. And you'll be asked a couple questions like when you're looking for care, in a generic sense, who you're looking for care. OndiCare provides care for all ages, all needs. We have doulas on the platform that provide infant care and overnight care. But primarily personal care assistants that provide special needs care and care for the adults that might be yours and my age that come home from the hospital with a hip replacement, and then the elderly, of course. So that's how you can find OndiCare, and our care concierge team will give you a call and greet you and help you along the way. We're always here. It's a managed care marketplace, if you think of kind of a mix between Uber and eBay with a care concierge team behind it.
Okay. Well, guys, coming up next, we're going to explore solutions for building a sustainable future of care for seniors and families. We'll be right back. We'll be right back with more insight, expert advice, and stories that matter to every generation. And we're back. I'm Hillary Bailey, and you're you're watching the Senior Care Conversation on Now Media Television. Hey guys, welcome back to the Senior Care Conversation. We are still here with Nicole, and we are going to go a bit off script during this section. We're going to talk a little bit about the future of caregiving, but we're also going to talk get a little more in depth about OndeCare. I think it's, you know, not about seniors, but it's great information for people to have these days. We have a lot of kiddos with special needs. So Nicole, go ahead and let's talk about, I know you guys provide caregivers for seniors, but let's talk about your pediatric care. Caregivers, your caregivers with special needs. Let's kind of like talk about that in a whole, kind of what you provide.
Sure. So OndeCare is a platform for care of all ages, all needs. When I first started raising funds, I had investors say, oh, you got to focus just on childcare. I'm like, no, look at the future. The future is, again, my sandwich generation conversation is we're going to be looking for care for our parents and our children at the same time. And everybody is aging and living longer. Longevity is a thing, not just for adults with no ailments as they grow up, but individuals with special needs are living much longer. They're outliving their parents even. So there's a whole caregiving legal issue out there. But OndeCare, again, has from day one been providing care for infants, children, those with special needs, whether they're children or adults, and adults of any age, and the elderly. Now, I will say in the beginning, we were more childcare, and now because of demand, 80-some% of our clients are those seeking care for their spouses or their parents. But what we were talking about at the break is the fact that daycare in the United States cuts off care for children once they turn 12. You cannot drop off a 13-year-old or 14-year-old into a daycare today. So what happens to the family with their child that can't go anywhere else but still needs daycare so they can go to work? They don't go to work, or somebody in the family doesn't go to work. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about in Switzerland, they have these, I just love this idea of multi-generational daycares, where there's all ages from infants to seniors in their hundreds, and they're being provided care. Didn't matter what age they are. It's a support system for families. And it just is, I can envision a gentler, more compassionate society growing up with the elderly. And it also solves the problem of depression, or at least helps improve the lightness in adults' lives when you have an infant in the room or a child running around. So I think daycare, and it's not our business, but multi-generational daycare should be the future of tomorrow, the future of the United States.
Well, that would be great. You know, I just think about, I love dementia. I'm a certified dementia practitioner. I just think of how wonderful that would be for some of my clients who would feel like they were in a family. You know, they may not know who they are, but they feel like they're in a family. And I can just imagine how calming, you know, that would be for them. Or, you know, we buy them fake babies, you know, to play. It's like, give them a real
and
one.
Fake babies and pets today.
Yes, babies okay. and pets. Yes, yes. So let me ask you a question. I'm going to get off topic again, but so my agency, so we have RN delegation, which basically means we can do some medical stuff, like with PEG tubes and medications and things like that. It gives us a little bit of an edge up because we can help, you know, with things of that nature. Your caregivers, do the same laws apply to private caregivers? Like they can they give medication? Can they do a PEG tube or help, you know, a client on hospice if they need something? Like, are they able to do things like that, or do you have as strict of rules as we do?
No, well, OndeCare is changing the paradigm. We are not an agency.
Right,
we are a
right.
marketplace,
yes.
Kind of like Uber changed for the taxi world.
Okay, gotcha.
So not all Uber drivers have medallions, right?
Yeah.
Our caregivers are only those with credentials, and our technically enabled onboarding system requires them to upload their nursing certificate, their PCA certificate from the Department of Disabilities, or their paraprofessional certificate from the school system, or whatever certificate they have. Nurses, teachers, EMTs, firefighters are on our platform. Doulas have certificates. But also med students and nursing students, instead of actual certificates today, who I think they all should actually get a CNA certificate at minimum, but they don't today. They upload their transcripts to prove that they're in this path. But I so no, I will say we kind of follow the same thing, the Good Samaritan law. It's up to the caregiver to provide the care that they feel comfortable providing. So during COVID, we had nurses on the platform that did provide critical skilled nursing care, like changing somebody's catheter. We send people home from the hospital, teach them how to change their own catheter. But when they don't know, when they have a problem and they can't do it themselves, it's a skilled requirement. And they have to go back to the hospital. But during COVID, people weren't going back to the hospital, even though they were in excruciating pain for whatever. So our nurses have had it during COVID, is the only time I'm aware of that they did this to help somebody, that so they didn't have to go back to the hospital. We're talking actually mid-2020s. But it's everything that they feel comfortable doing. There are people, and certificates are, again, something that's not standardized. The Department of Disabilities has a MedPass cert for many people in many of our markets. So those with a MedPass cert are not only trained and able to do that, but they are proficient at it. Family members, we take care of meds, right? We pass meds to our family. We're not certified. So it's a little bit of a gray area. But we leave it to the caregiver. Some caregivers are comfortable with doing med reminders and even handing them the meds and the water. And some are not. And it's up to them. And it's up to the family to say, okay, this works for me or this doesn't work for me.
Well,
And sometimes
I mean,
families are doing that.
I like that. I think it's I wish the laws were not so strict on us, but I mean, they just are.
Know.
So we do what we have to do. But no, I'm
Right.
glad that to know that they can do what they feel comfortable with. So let's switch over. So how can the government policy better support family caregivers and professional caregivers?
Yeah, well, the government, I actually am not one that expects the government to pay for everyone's needs, no matter what it is, because, but by offering business tax credits to provide family caregiving as a benefit, as prevalent as dental and vision, is where I see the government supporting, increasing dependent, as opposed to increased dependent tax credits. I don't think that actually works in this country, giving people a dependent tax credit. I think people take advantage of it at times, and it just it doesn't perpetuate the ecosystem. And fair labor protection that value caregiving as essential work. Again, it's that infrastructure. And it's not a federal government burden. It's all the way down to local governments and community organizations. But I think policies need to change that protect people that provide care. I think we're getting more comfortable saying that, hey, my kid has to be picked up from school, but it's still a lonely, independent journey for family caregivers, because we're afraid. We're afraid of being passed over for promotion or being fired for having that family burden. But all of these are ideas to explore.
So I know, let's talk about how communities can step in and help share their responsibilities. I know here in Texas, we have, you know, a lot of churches have senior helpers or, you know, people that, you know, are just in a group, they'll go and, you know, help take somebody to the grocery store and things like that. I've not heard of someone that can help, you know, medically or maybe help them with, you know, their ADLs. But what are your thoughts on that? And is there anything different going on in Ohio that we need to do in Texas?
I think there's probably things that states can learn from states, for sure. Oh my gosh, there's subsidies. New York State was the first state to provide a subsidy for in-home custodial care. Mm-hmm. And they're talking to Maryland. I actually introduced individuals in the New York State of Aging with the individual that was building the plan for Maryland. So it's starting to grow. I think it's going to happen in California anytime soon, but yeah, communities, definitely church organizations, networks, respite programs at these organizations.
Yes.
And buildings, schools can have respite programs. The buildings are empty often.
Right.
And caregiver support groups, like Alcoholics Anonymous, it has to be more prevalent, mm-hmm. and more accessible. But all of those things can happen through communities. And I do send people to churches to find support and networks and community organizations. Like you said, there are transportation systems mm-hmm. out there. And there are volunteer programs. There's a neat one in Washington, D.C., actually, that is not only volunteer transportation, but companionship, which is, like you said, not all the ADLs, but the bottom half of care needs, which mm-hmm. is just companionship, making a meal, having taking them to McDonald's for a quick meal, or sitting with them in the park, just taking them out for a walk. There's lots of people that can do that. There's a really cool company called NeighborForce that is adding to our workforce by connecting retirees with individuals in their neighborhood that need companion care. And that's all they do is companion care, not the whole gamut of care needs. But that initial, and I think they average kind of something like 4 hours a week, 2 to 4 hours a week. They might do the errands running or just sit with them in the park. And that's a neat company out of Richmond, Virginia, that is providing solutions. It's not free. It's not a community free program.
That's very cool. Very, very cool. So guys, we're going to be right back after this break with a discussion on how families can make care plans before a crisis hits. We'll be right back. We'll be right back with more insight, expert advice, and stories that matter to every generation. And we're back. I'm Hillary Bailey, and you're watching the Senior Care Conversation on Now Media Television. Like what you're watching? Don't miss a second of this show or any of your Now Media TV favorites, streaming live and on demand wherever and whenever you want. Grab the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to bilingual programs in English and Spanish. Prefer podcasts? Listen anytime at www.nowmedia.tv. Now let's dive into proactive care planning. Nicole, welcome back again. I'm so sad this is our last segment. I have so enjoyed having you on the show today. So we have covered the challenges and the future of care. Now let's focus on a practical approach, planning ahead so families aren't forced into crisis decisions, which we see so much. And I think it's just because people don't want to talk about end of life, things like that. It's just awkward, you know, conversation. So this is gonna be about giving peace of mind and creating clear steps for care before emergencies actually do arise. So why do so many families wait until a crisis before making care decisions?
Well, first, crises are often surprises and overwhelming. Families avoid tough conversations until a crisis forces their hand, leaving them unprepared. But honestly, care is so very personal, and many in the boomer generation, like my parents, are private and strive not to be a burden. We get a group text from my dad, who's 88, saying, by the way, your mother's been in the hospital for the last 2 days. They thought it was just pneumonia, but it's a heart condition. And we're like, what? We're all over the country going, what?
Oh, no.
Yeah, these strong personality traits make it tough to plan in advance, for sure.
So what are the biggest risks, in your opinion, of delaying care planning until the last minute?
Well, it leads to rush decisions. It limits options. Options are often taken off the table. Higher costs, too. And extraordinary stress for everybody concerned. And there you go. You start breaking relationships, too.
Absolutely. I see this all the time in my work. People don't have conversations with their parents. They've got four or five children, right? And then we go into the crisis hits. This child wants to do this. This child wants to do that. This child wants to do this. Maybe they don't have a medical power of attorney at hand, and it's just a mess. Just an absolute mess. So if I can get, I've talked about this in several of my shows. It's like, please sit down. I know it's uncomfortable. I understand that. But, you know, my husband and I have already sat down and talked about, like, this is what we want. And of course, it's going to change. We're only, you know, in our mid-40s, it's going to change. But we've told our kids, like, this is what our will says. This is who our medical power of attorney is. This is, you know, where our money is going to go. The money we have now and the house, you know, this, these are all the things. These are the things we want medically. We would like to stay at home, or, you know, this or that or the other. It's like, I think it takes the stress, number one, off of the kids. And then again, when the crisis hits, it's like, they're like, oh, okay, now we know what to do. We had that conversation with mom. This is what she said that she wanted to do. Yeah, was it an awkward conversation? Absolutely. But it's one that you only have to have once or twice. So right. Have it so there's not fighting and all the things going on.
Yes,
so in
definitely.
Your opinion, I mean, have you, I'm assuming you've had to do this. Have you had to have meaningful conversations with your family about care?
Yes. When my in-laws required care, we were young. Yeah. And totally naive. And this was the impetus for OndiCare, but they didn't want to bother us. They didn't want to become a burden, but all of a sudden we were just failing them significantly. Not getting them to doctor's visits on time. They wouldn't reach out to us until the office closed. But you have to start with small open conversations. When it came to talk about where do you want to live? If it's not in your home, and even getting meals delivered was a stressful conversation, because it was already at the time when they were feeling deficient or a burden. Mm-hmm. But if you have them beforehand, what their preferences are, what their values are, about specific needs before they arise, it's important. And at a minimum, if your parents are not willing to have these conversations because they're so private and personal, and you are lucky enough to have siblings, you have to talk with each other and agree in advance how you hope to work together, and what you think you'd be willing to give. People have different capacities. Some right. might be that, oh, I'll quit my job and move in with mom and dad. And some might be, I can't do any of that, but I will contribute financially. Mm-hmm. Or we have families that share on OndiCare. We've got one individual that lives out of state that she does all the coordination. She books the caregivers. She utilizes whatever credit card, because all the siblings actually share care for their mother, who's in their 90s. And she's in charge of all the interactions with the caregivers, and she has 24/7 care for her mom right now. But her mom lives in the state with her sister and her sister's husband. And so they take the physical care. They greet the caregivers during bad weather. They might even go pick them up. But Barbara's the one talking to them on the app, and her sister and brother-in-law are actually driving to a different city to pick up a caregiver because the weather eliminated an opportunity for that caregiver to get there. So this kind of understanding of what people are able to and willing to do, and lean on your strengths. So when the time arises, whether you've talked to your parents or not, or had a full conversation, you're coming from a place of understanding, and I think it helps limit the fracturing and the hurt feelings and then the failures of caring for your parents while a crisis does hit.
I loved how you talked about leaning on your strengths. I think some children are afraid to be like, I don't want to change mom, or I don't want to do this. I don't feel comfortable doing this. And that's okay. I think please be open and honest about what, you know, you're willing to do. Because again, if you're not confident in it, you're not going to do it well. And then you're going to be stressed out anyway. So it's okay if you don't have a caregiver's heart, or if you don't have the stomach to do the hard stuff, it's okay. Yeah. It's definitely okay to say that and let your other siblings that are, because there are people like us who we don't mind that. That doesn't bother us. It's right. Not.
And,
we,
and people's spouses might do better with your own parents than yourself.
Yeah.
My sister-in-law is an amazing, proactive caregiver that brings meals when we finally learn that somebody's coming home from a hospital.
Yeah.
but my husband couldn't bathe his father, and I realized that I could, and his brother was comfortable enough with me doing it. And these things you might even learn in the moment, but to think about it ahead of time is important.
Absolutely. Nicole, this has been an incredibly valuable conversation. I have enjoyed so much talking with you. Where can people follow your work and learn more about OndeCare?
Well, you can just go to OndeCare.com. There's a little about us section. You can reach me via LinkedIn, Nicole Pelosi. But our care concierge team is there to support anybody who's interested in seeking care for all ages, all needs.
So let me ask you really quick. We do have about 30 seconds. I wanted to ask you, how do caregivers find you? Same way?
Caregivers are telling their sisters, their brothers, their mothers.
Yes.
And it's wonderful that mothers are coming back into the workforce from because their caregivers are on our platform. Families are bringing caregivers to OndeCare, and caregivers are bringing clients to OndeCare. So there's a big private duty network out there. They're in churches, they're in community organizations. They find clients everywhere. Most of our caregivers come through us through word of mouth. But of course, there's traditional postings on Indeed and social media and other places if people are looking for ad hoc controllable gig work, as they call it.
Very good. Nicole, thank you again for joining us and sharing your insights today. We've learned about the hidden struggles of home care, the under-evaluation of caregivers in America, the steps needed to build a sustainable future of care, and how to proactively plan before a crisis. For our viewers, remember that care is more than tasks. It's about people, relationships, and planning ahead. We encourage you to explore solutions, support caregivers, and take actionable steps for your family. I'm Hillary Bailey, and this has been the Senior Care Conversation, where families and care come first. Thank you so much.